make people feel uncomfortable. And then you know that at that point, then you're driving the bus. Culpepper could have went somewhere else and done even more fat, disgusting things like he did.
So would you say you're such a baby that the Dolphins make you cry?
It's Hoot now, guys. It's Hoot. Oh, sorry, dude. You know what? Your best work comes when you're, you know, back's against the wall. I said, you know what? You're right.
Just like Mike McCarthy. And leave the Lombardi trophy when you go.
The Pecker.
Hi, this is Jerry Kramer, and you're listening to The Sweep.
Oh, I have sizzle.
I don't even know what that means.
No one knows what it means, but it's provocative.
Nice. It
gets the people going.
All right, here we go, fella. Let's have a little fun today.
Hey, what's going on, Pack Nation? Welcome to the Sweep Podcast. This is Fred Thurston, joined by Cameron Gilbert, and joining us just a little later will be Josh Houts from SB Nation's The Finsider, covering all things Miami Dolphins. The Green Bay Packers were once again defeated by the New England Patriots and fall to a measly 3-4-1 and are now third in the NFC North. It's not good. It's not fun. The house, ladies and gentlemen, is on fire.
The building is on fire.
We've got tons to discuss, but as always, let's quick shout out to our sponsors, the Ground Round Nina and Pride and Glory Clothing Company. Check them out online at groundroundnina.com and prideandglory63.com for awesome deals. And while you're at it, make sure and check out The Sweep on Facebook. Just go up to that little search button and type in The Sweep. Or on Twitter, our handle is @TheSweepPodcast. And now you can hear us on SoundCloud. All right, we are back. Cameron, what is going on, my man?
What is up, Fred?
Good to be back. Is it really good to be back? I feel like every time we're on, it's nothing exciting to talk about anymore.
It's been a couple of rough weeks. It's getting colder. You know, getting older. It's depressing. It's a little bit depressing.
The Packers are the one thing that shine bright for me usually in these dark winters, and it's not happening, and it's really bumming me out. 3-4-1 losing record, 1-1-1 in the North. Pretty much I would say we're third in the North right now, which is pretty disgusting. Coming off two losses, you know, I as rough as it sounds, as rough as it seems, you know, part of me still says it's the Rams and it's the Patriots in Foxborough. So it lightens it a little bit. But I think we've got some questions to answer and even to talk about here. You know, with the Rams, we'll get into some of the stuff with the Dolphins coming up when we have our special guest, Josh Houts, coming on. But let's stick with the Patriots. Another game, I think, that we beat ourselves in. A game that we had a chance to win. I feel like we really had something going there until Aaron Jones fumbled that ball. And I think that kind of switched the momentum and kind of daggered us a little bit. What did you see, and what do you think we got to do going forward?
Well, for more context, you know, we're under 500 through 8 games for the first time that Aaron Rodgers has been healthy in his career. You know, and you want to talk about how healthy he is. You know, I think he's throwing targets off pat, like off target passes, more than he ever has. I think the stupid penalties, the roughing the punter that kind of just flipped the field, and kind of the pace of the offense when we needed it, and the kind of anemic three and outs, it's rough because the Aaron Rodgers Packers can they can beat anybody and they can hang with anybody, but the Mike McCarthy Packers can be beat by anybody, and that's just like the reality is that, you know, you can there are really simple ways to beat this team, and when we aren't beating ourselves, when we look good like we did against the Rams and we did against the Patriots for large stretches of the game, especially defensively against Tom Brady through the air, I was really impressed. You can't do that. And that's part of what I talk about when I keep saying we can't play a complete game because we're so inconsistent in playing up to the level that we need to.
It's kind of amusing in a weird, sick, demented way because when we talk to people, I mean, we have guests on here a lot of times. Sometimes we don't, sometimes we do, but even just outside people who aren't following the Packers or aren't necessarily fans of the Packers, and I talk to them, they're like, yeah, but you got Aaron Rodgers. You guys are good to go. And then I'm like, yeah, sure, totally, dude. And then I sit back and you and me and people around listening to the show, I would think, we follow him so extensively and we're like, that's not enough. It's not doing it. It's not cute anymore. It's not enough to win games. And part of that's true. I think partly it is still enough. But you're right. I mean, we cannot play a full game. Yeah. It's become every year a new dilemma has arose from whatever ashes it comes from. But, you know, we've had issues on defense and now it looks like our defense is shored up. Looks like our defense is getting to where it needs to be. And now the offense seems to pummel down. I don't know where we're headed. It's strange. I find myself trying to figure out what's going on, where we're going. I want to chalk it up to new GM, semi-new GM, new defensive coordinator, new offensive coordinator, semi-new offensive coordinator. And just having a little bit of those early woes that you have when you're kind of switching things up. But it still comes down to a concern with McCarthy. And I can't seem to find an answer for him or something to back him up with because it's bad play. You get a lot of people on our page on Facebook saying, well, you know, it's not McCarthy dropping the balls. It's not McCarthy making the bad throws. It's not McCarthy causing those penalties. What's the defense to that? I mean, because that's true, right? I mean, it's not McCarthy doing those things. Is it fair to always truly blame McCarthy? Because yes, it's technically his game plan, but he's not the one out there having to execute it.
Well, I think it's important when we talk about McCarthy to get really specific about what his problems are, because he is a great coach. Don't get me wrong. I think he's a great coach. He's going to be successful if he continues coaching after he leaves the Packers this offseason. He's a good football mind, but I think the past couple weeks we've seen acutely what is wrong with his approach to the game, with his style of leadership and his style of coaching. And you kind of see it now. And you're right, that is a kind of like a direct quote from almost everybody I talk to who's a fan of another team when I'm talking to them about playing them. And they're like, well, Aaron Rodgers, anything can happen. That is almost like an every time I talk to somebody, I hear that.
Yeah.
And that's true. And you go back, you know, I would say for the last, you know, 5 years, maybe like back to Aaron's first collarbone injury. And you look at all those like playoff, those close playoff victories, those close playoff defeats and stuff like that. And, it's Aaron Rodgers like running around, and making crazy plays deep down the field. And it's cool, but it's, you know, it's nerve wracking because at those points, I think we had a lot of talent and, it was like the beginning of the cracks in the McCarthy system, were starting to show. So, like a few things I mean by that, like, first of all, I think discipline is a problem on this team. I think you look at like the free rein that Dom Capers is given or was given, the free rein that Ron Zook has been given this year. Like there's so many things on special teams that just seem to be unraveling. And we seem so relaxed and complacent about it that it's incredibly frustrating to a fan who's paying attention to that kind of stuff. And then for some more examples, just look at how anemic the offense was before and after that fumble, right? When we finally got the pace going where we caught the defense on their heels, and this is what, I mean, I called it out last week. I said, this is what the Patriots are going to do to us. We need to do it to them because it's really effective when you have a great quarterback with great vision, when your scheme is almost improvised, rolling up and down the field. And you saw when we got rolling at the end of the third quarter, unfortunately, it was like, you know, the worst time to do it because it was, you know, we had two long passes to Exxon Valdez that like, you know, but ran us right into the quarter break. And then when we started rolling again in the fourth quarter, we had that momentum, but the fumble happened. And it's just those kind of, and that's Aaron Jones' first career fumble, you know, and it, what is like 13th or 14th carry of the game. So you got to like look at how McCarthy sets these things up. And he's going to use that as like as an example of what not to do, but that was what you should have been doing. I mean, that was like a freak incident because we had done so many things to beat ourselves up before then. And then I guess the final example, I think, of McCarthy just being so uncreative, and you saw this when we were down two scores with 8 minutes left. The schemes that we were running were so wrong for the situation. And all the routes were the same depth down the field, about 15 yards or beyond. They had like very deep development. He keeps leaving tackles on an island. He loves to leave our tackles on islands. And, you know, Spriggs, I'll say he did a pretty good job in there. But, you know, all they had to do is bring an extra couple guys and say, hey, Gilmore, lock up Devontae, and safeties, don't let anything get underneath you. And you see how frustrated Aaron Rodgers is getting because there's not much he can do in that situation. There's not many packages he can audible into or change into just because the situation doesn't allow it. And it's incredibly frustrating. But I thought those were some great examples of how McCarthy is just getting outcoached and leaving us in a position where we're wasting the best years of 12's career.
I know we bring it up kind of every episode of whether or not it's time for him to go. Do you still think it's time to go?
I do. And
that's end of the year thing too, people. I don't think
it's the Packers, guys. Sort of
chaos. He will
never, we're the Packers. Yeah. He's
not going anywhere midseason. People keep asking me, you know, do you think he'll get fired after this week or that? I'm like, they're not going to do that. Even if he flats out loses every game for the rest of the season, I still don't even think that they do it midseason. I think they're going to wait. But it's just, at some point things start to feel stale, and that's basically it. And I think that's where it is. I think, you know, you mentioned it with discipline. I think that, you know, the team itself has kind of lost their, you know, their faith, their belief, in McCarthy. I think when you're a player, you know, you look to your coach, and you kind of hope that he's going to lead you the right way and that he's going to, you know, do the right thing and bring the best out of you. And I don't think that players feel that same way, with him. We did do On the Sweep on Facebook. I put out a poll a week ago, or a couple days ago, I should say, asking if he should be fired. 78% said yes, on under a little bit of a little under 1,000 people voted. So thank you for doing that if you did. But I can't, unless we go on some crazy run, I don't see him coming back. I think he probably would have been gone a few years ago if it wouldn't have been for some of the crazy runs that we've gone on. You know, but then the question lies within that. I mean, who do you go to? Where, you know, how do you, is there anyone out there that's better, a better fit than McCarthy right now? And obviously, you know, it's possible, but I don't know right now. Let me ask you something. And this is a little crazy, but I'm feeling a little crazy. Is it completely out of any realm of possibility that the Packers and Bill Belichick come to terms as a head coach? Would that ever happen? And here's my thoughts. Here's my thoughts. Because it's crazy. I know it's crazy. I was at work today and it popped in my head. And maybe it's because, you know, the video, I don't know if anyone saw it, NFL mic'd up Bill Belichick, Aaron Rodgers meet after Aaron Rodgers says you're the best. Bill Belichick says, no, you are. You're awesome. Cool moment. Check it out if you guys see it. But with the controversy that has sort of happened in New England after last year, we haven't heard much more about it since then. Wouldn't it be possible for him to go and go win a Super Bowl with Aaron Rodgers and play in the NFC and defeat the Patriots maybe in the Super Bowl and, you know, not have to deal with that kind of, I mean, wouldn't that be kind of a ride off into the sunset kind of thing? Or here's where I contradict it. I don't know if Belichick wants to win one with Rodgers, because then again, will it always be, was he only good because of the quarterbacks he had? Kind of the Phil Jackson type thing with Colby and Jordan. So tell me I'm crazy. Tell me it's the dumbest thing and it's not possible.
It's not the dumbest thing.
Thanks.
But Fred, the more likely scenario there is stagnation in Green Bay and Aaron Rodgers demands a trade. And he goes to join Bill Belichick like Kevin Durant.
No way.
And he just puts on the dark Kermit hoodie.
No.
I see this. I kind of see this frustration in Aaron Rodgers has been mounting. And I think you see it this year more than ever. And this is not a relaxed situation. And no. I think he would be blunt and tell you that. And I think the fact that he hasn't come out and said anything to the contrary, kind of tells you what his thinking is. On the other side of the coin, I think he looked across the sidelines. I thought Josh McDaniels was kind of licking his lips, looking at Aaron Rodgers making a couple throws. And it was laughable because we were moving the pocket really early in the game. Like we were running these bootlegs. That's how we scored to Devontae on like a little improvisation, right? And the two times we threw down the middle of the field, we got a long gain to MVS and we got a first down. We didn't throw it on the middle of the field at all. Like there's no threat of Jimmy Graham doing anything right now. There's no threat of, and it's to me, it's scheme. It's just like, we're not using the weapons we have. And once you get to the point of that game where they, like Chris was saying in our chat the other night, they opened up the playbook after the Jones fumble, and those trick plays that they ran on us is just Josh McDaniels just laughing in our face.
Yeah.
It's a little bit crazy to me that McCarthy can see that week in and week out, that we can watch all this film. As it's our job to go in and watch these other teams doing all this cool creative stuff and, you know, not come back at them with it. Cause it's effective because it works in multiple ways. You saw it during the Super Bowl when that Philly special worked and that Tom Brady pass didn't. There were mind games going on there. Just the way, you know, they were using James White and they were spreading everything around. Even when Tom Brady wasn't being effective, and that was, you know, in the red zone, he was, I think he was like 1 for 9 or something. And he got one pass interference call that got him a first down. You know, he had that six pass stretch where he couldn't get a pass off, that they were still manufacturing offense. And that's something that we can't do. We have so many just uninspired three and outs that look like it's a bad team. And if it wasn't Aaron Rodgers, and if, like, you know, you didn't know who was on the field, you would say, oh, it's, what are we watching, a Browns game? Like, it's pathetic, frankly, and it makes me sad.
Dude, all I kept thinking when they were running those trick plays is that they're probably going at halftime or at the end of the game, and they're like, dude, did you see how he fell for that? What a loser. Like, I feel like we're getting laughed at, and it sucks because that should not be the case at all.
For such a great defensive performance, I got to say, like, to bite so hard on a Chris Hogan bubble screen, you know, oh, my God. Come on. That was an ugly play.
It's a little rough, man. I don't know. I just there's things need to change. Things need to change fast. We've seen some change. Let's get into some of those.
Well, but before we get into that, let me just point out, looking around the league, look at what Atlanta has done, and they've had all these injuries on defense. I think they were in a worse situation than us on defense. But sober Steve Sarkisian has come on out, and their offense is just tearing teams apart, and their defense is playing pretty well, considering that they've lost, you know, two Pro Bowlers. And it's just little adjustments like that. Look at what Cam Newton is doing with Norv Turner, using his legs to sort of manufacture offense again in a safe way where he's not, like, getting headshot all the time. But they're doing really creative things on offense that really flow with everything's working together. They're using Christian McCaffrey really well. It's just every other team is doing it except for us.
Why? Why are we so late to the party?
I do not know. And I think a lot of it has to do with something. We talked about this with Jair a few weeks ago. We talked about how he has the dog in him, and he has this attitude, and he's hungry. And you look at the leadership of the Packers, and it's all like these Zen warriors. And I think, like, I would say 50% of the time when Mike McCarthy gives a press conference, the microphone isn't, like, properly hooked up, and it just sounds like he's mumbling and I can't hear anything. You know, he's not an alpha dog. And, I mean, he might think he is, but he doesn't have the rah-rah that Tom Brady has. I mean, Bill Belichick doesn't have that, but you understand his leadership style through and through. You understand what he's trying to execute, and he's a total hard ass. And organizationally, he's a hard ass, and his moves make sense. We'll see what happens with Gute and what kind of identity he develops. But I don't think Aaron Rodgers is very hyper aggressive in that way either. I think he can get upset, but I think more often than not, he's pretty passive aggressive, especially when it comes to things that are a little bit beyond his control within the organization.
Want some excitement. I really want some excitement. I don't know where that comes from.
It comes from, you know, hoping that Kentucky's edge rusher, Josh Allen, falls to us in the draft.
Is that – I mean, I definitely agree that edge rusher – I mean, I've played it off for a couple years. But yeah, that's definitely a huge necessity. I think, though, our defense, like I said before, is starting to make those moves to being a better defense. I still think that getting our offense back into some sort of groove is where it needs to go, to give our defense a little bit more something to work with, basically. I just don't see it.
Yeah, the two big moves I would have liked to have seen Gute make, and the moves that he has made I guess I don't disagree with them, but it's they're all kind of wait and see stuff. But the two moves I really, really love is massive overtures for Khalil Mack. Like, make really public what you want to do. Get the team involved. Get some players lobbying for him. Go after him really hard. And then I think, you know, go try to get a running back. Go try and get some depth there. Go try and, you know, like, make some inquiries about Le'Veon Bell, leak something about it. Don't let Amir Abdullah fall to the Vikings. It's interesting to me. I mean, I see, like, with the haha move, with the fourth round trade, obviously if you let him go, you're going to get a compensatory pick that's in the fourth. But I think when you go and you actually trade him before the season is over, you're kind of saying, I'm going to go play in free agency next year and over the summer. And when we get Clay and Cobb off the books, when we have these draft capital to play with, you're going to see what my plan is. And I don't like it because it's, you know, I want to win now. It kind of seems like we're trying to do both things, which is a little frustrating. But, you know, I have to be optimistic about that. Otherwise, I'll go crazy.
Yeah, I think you kind of nail it there in the sense of we're playing both hands. I think Goot coming in, making a little bit of a culture switch with some of the guys. Obviously, we saw Whitehead being released. Haha, Ty. I think that he wants to make this his own, make this his team. Make some moves, bring in, you know, get rid of some guys, bring in some extra capital, go play free agency, kind of rebuild. I don't really want to call it a rebuild because I don't think you can when you have Aaron Rodgers. And I think that's where the issue comes there, because it's kind of one of those years like, okay, well, let's get through it. And then we have a ton of draft picks. We have a lot of money to spend. We can go after some big names, but we have Aaron Rodgers on kind of the latter part of his career. So we don't get that luxury of having a year to take off. We always have to win. And so we're balancing on that. There's a lot of potential for some pretty decent free agents out there. That are going to be available at the end of the year. And I think if you want to look ahead of yourself, I mean, I can see where Goot has an idea of what he wants to do, where he wants to go and who's available. But yeah, I mean, for us, when it comes to having a team with Aaron Rodgers, we're not okay with just taking one and sitting on the sidelines for the rest of the year. And I don't want to say that's what we're doing, because I can't honestly believe that's what we're doing. But it kind of feels like it, doesn't it? I mean, getting rid of some guys, stocking up on picks, you know, we have guys with cap situation, you know, we haven't even talked once or heard anything about possible, you know, re-signing of Clay. So it looks like that's going to be a done deal. So you got to think that there's something going on here.
I think to the latter point. So when we're talking about winning now, all the moves that have been made have basically been made on the defensive side of the ball, outside of cutting Ty.
Yeah.
And defense wins championships, but defense isn't going to win you games at this point in the year. And I think if you look around, I actually think it's pretty smart to kind of look at the team like this, because if you look around the league, there's no excellent defense right now. That's just like destroying people, right? It's all offense. Pretty much any offense that's excellent can perform against any defense. And if you're the Chiefs, you just run over everybody. If you're the Rams, you can run over anybody. But you know, that's not quite true. I mean, we saw it with the last 2 weeks with the Rams. But you can kind of see how, and this is something that we talked about at the beginning of the year, defense gels. Like, first of all, you have a lot of guys that develop over the course of the year, young guys. who don't get a lot of time together in camp. But defense is more than anything. You're going to figure out your role. You're going to figure out maybe like your position hybridization. You're going to figure out like your best packages, your best lineups, your best blitzes, your best, you know, all this stuff becomes clearer and clearer throughout the year. So getting rid of HaHa, who's, you know, the more you look at him, you know, his tackles were way down. He wasn't being physical. I'm more and more okay with that move. And the other thing that you think about when you look at how Goot and how Ted in his last year approached the draft, is they're doing this kind of shotgun approach, which we've talked about too, which is where we go after a position of need with two or three picks, or maybe four picks. You know, you grab three late round running backs, grab three late round wide receivers, go grab three, four cornerbacks in the first two rounds of 2 years drafts. You're gonna hit on some of those. And that's a good long-term plan. Now, with free agency, that's where scheme and working with the coach and finding all these other things, that's where like the organizational flow really comes into play. And, you know, Gutenkunz can't say you're fired to Mike McCarthy. That has to be Mark Murphy. And there's a lot of different moving parts in this organization. And I think that's the big difference too, is that Bill Belichick is such an evil genius and is so obsessed with football that he is every part of that organization. You know, he has hands in it, especially the management side and the personnel side. And that's something you can't say about McCarthy. It's a little bit frustrating, but you think you can do it. And again, if you're there with Aaron Rodgers, that might happen. But at this point, it's a lot more of a calculation. It's do we need 6 wins to get in? Do we need 7 wins to get in? At this point, it's kind of a foot race, and it's about difficulty of schedule, where the buys fall, things like that. And the next couple weeks will be telling, and then all these divisional games will be really telling.
Well, there's definitely some talent out there in free agency, especially on the defensive side of the ball. You know, Landon Collins, Earl Thomas, Dee Ford, Jadeveon Clowney, I believe are all up for contracts, just a few names. There's potential. It'll be interesting. I have a lot of faith in what Goot's kind of doing here. You know, he talked about HaHa. I mentioned the release of Whitehead. Let's quick touch on that, really. Do you think that was warranted?
I think it pains me to say it, but I think there probably was something that happened in the locker room after he was dismissed. The penalty was stupid. The move was stupid. But, you know, the ejection was not justified. I think something must have happened going on there. And the move they made, the corresponding roster move, this guy they picked up on waivers from the Jets, he was a rookie when Pettine was there. So that's an organizational move that I like to see. So that's sort of like a good example of, hey, I know this guy a little bit. You know, with Mo Wilkerson, we saw that too. With Tremont too. Like, hey, we all have familiarity with each other. Let's figure out a way to scheme together. That's the kind of organizational cohesiveness that I think is can only say positive things for the future.
Yeah, you mentioned bringing in Ibrahim Campbell. That was the guy with Pettine. They also getting rid of Whitehead. Now, this is the thing about Whitehead. The ejection obviously wasn't warranted. I don't think anyone believed it was. The play itself from Whitehead was stupid. You got to be able to control your emotions. I don't know one, why he was ejected, and one, why he was released. The only thing I can think of is two things, actually. One, he was brought in the coach's office and GM's office to talk about it, and he just wasn't, no remorse, didn't care, whatever. And they said, well, you know what, screw you, you're gone. Or two, there's more to it. And he said something to the ref, which warranted the ejection, which eventually warranted the cutting. That's also a possibility. We don't know for sure. But you get rid of Whitehead. You know, you put Geronimo is now on IR, which we'll throw out there too. They move up Will Redmond to the active roster. They sign Ibrahim Campbell. The signing that is going to change the future here was the signing of Brady Sheldon, linebacker from Ferris State.
6'5", 231.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Oh, yeah.
This is the guy.
Fackrell Jr.
This is the guy, dude. No, I'm just kidding. But a lot of changes in a week. I mean, I know it's nothing drastic. It's not anything that's going to change the season, I don't think. But, you know, there's some interesting moves. Let me quick ask you two things about these moves and what moves could have been made. You know, obviously a definite concern at edge rusher, and then putting Geronimo on IR. Why not entertain the idea of signing Bruce Irvin and even Dez Bryant? And I'll just say this. I don't think Dez would have came here. I think he publicly said he wouldn't. But why are we not in that discussion, especially with Bruce Irvin?
Well, I think with Bruce Irvin, it was a pretty particular case. I think the teams that were in on him found out pretty easily. And I think that's one of the things that you want to do. Like, the Eagles have been very good about sort of publicly saying, hey, we're doing this and this and this this year. And then the Golden Tate move, these are all PR moves that they're making, trying to say, hey, I know we know we're letting you down after a Super Bowl season, and we're trying to get our season right. But with Bruce Irvin, I think particularly, I think he just wanted to go home, and he's from Atlanta. And that's where he wanted to be. And I think that's as simple as kind of just like calling his agent saying, hey, does he have any interest in coming up here? And it's kind of hard to say to a lot of these guys, hey, do you want to come live in Green Bay? and that's, there's a selection of bowling alleys.
Yeah, name one other place that has a selection of bowling alleys, you son of a...
And I love the great state of Wisconsin, and I love Green Bay, and I love that it's one of the only states in the country where the bar density is greater than the church density. But it's tough. Like, the small market free agents, it's really tough. You got to go find guys who are, like, first of all, very wholesome. And second of all, you know, with the exception of like Andre Rison, and you got to find guys that are, you know, just live and breathe football. The Reggie Whites, the Charles Woodsons, these are the golden examples. It's kind of tough to figure out how to get people up into Green Bay. Cause I don't know. I mean, obviously, quote, playing with Aaron Rodgers only works for tight ends who are, you know, on the back ends of their careers.
You know, I don't want to always believe that. I've been using that forever and ever, that you have to find guys who want to come and play here. But at some point, isn't it just about football? I mean, do you really like, is it that big of a factor? If you're a free agent, Cam, and you can basically pick where you want to choose, but not really. I mean, does it really make that big of a difference?
Well, I think, you know, for 90% of guys, like it is in any market, it's about job. It's about money.
Right.
Beyond that,
if you're going to get offered, so if I'm going to offer you $10 million a year and the chance to play with Aaron Rodgers, but you have to play in Green Bay, Wisconsin, or I offer you $7 million, but you get to play in Miami with Miami Beach, I mean, don't you think you're always going to take Green Bay? I mean, isn't winning more important, or is it money still?
Am I Julian Edelman? Like, where am I in my career? Have I won Super Bowls? How old am I? How much money have I banked? There's so much to go on there. And and it was always kind of like, it's tough when you guys who quote unquote really want to win, because like there's always like the voice in the back of my head is like, we got to go sign T.O. We got to go sign 35-year-old T.O. to be our fourth receiver behind Donald Driver or something.
Let me interrupt you here. To bounce off of that, DeSean Jackson desperately wants out of Tampa. Would that be a fun, interesting fit? I mean, he's a deep threat. He can still burn people. I know he's older. I know he's got issues. But he wants to win. He's at a point in his career where he doesn't care about the money as much anymore. He just wants to win. And he can still burn. He's a Cal guy. I mean, wouldn't that be a good match?
That'd be cool. I mean, if that could happen, that would be cool. But you know, his contract is not insignificant. If he wanted to work something out with us, like this Dez Bryant deal, like say Jeremy Maclin didn't get hurt this off season, and we wanted to go get a guy like that to help us out. First of all, I still think we've used one return from injury designation on Trevor Davis, but we have another one, and Jake Kumerow could come off injured reserve in a couple weeks. And I would be excited to see what he can do against some regular season competition. But yeah, those kind of deals are, I like them a lot. The problem with those is just, you know, there's really no insurance for injury. You see Mel Wilkerson, how that has happened with us. And I think it can really easily turn into like feeling snake bit when you sign a bad deal with somebody, or you have like an onerous contract, or, you're still paying somebody that you don't even start anymore. Those kind of moves can be bad. But on the other hand, I think it's like if anybody has shown like the last couple of years, it's to take risks. Like if you're conservative, you don't win. You got to take risks. You got to make moves like that. I think while by and large, most of our problems are McCarthy related, we still have this sense of conservatism, the sense of like huffiness, I don't know, this small town insularity, this protectiveness that kind of keeps us from taking chances on stuff like that.
Well, damn it, I want to take some chances.
I agree.
And I've always been, you go back for as long as I can remember, I've always been the guy about not taking those crazy chances because of, you know, the instances like the Mo Wilkerson and things like that, where, you know, it can bite us in the ass and we kind of lose out on a situation. And I don't know if it's the desperate times call for desperate measures type situation here, but I want to see something. And I think maybe as a fan base as a whole, we all need to just pump the brakes and let this season ride out, see what happens, and then go into one full, genuine off season with the Goot and see what happens. And if we come out of this off season with nothing but just draft picks, then maybe there's another cause for concern. But let's see what he does. We don't know yet. We don't know what he's capable of, and we don't know what his plan of attack is. Because I'll guarantee that when he became GM, the only thing that was on his whiteboard, I doubt it was just what was going to happen in 2018. He has the next 5 years mapped out and planned out, I would hope.
Oh, for sure.
So
I think not only
a little bit of patience on the situation.
Yeah, I mean, I think he's looking ahead to, okay, when does McCarthy retire? When does Rodgers retire? And I think he's been in the building now for two Rodgers injuries that kind of show you what happens when you don't have depth. And he has learned that, well, that'll get you fired pretty quickly. But, I mean, maybe not in Green Bay. But that'll, you know, kill you in this league. And I think he definitely has a plan. And we talked about this last week with the haha move, with like these kind of culture moves and like this, you know, we're moving forward with X, Y, and Z and kind of the allowances they've given to Patton on the defensive side of the ball and how they're lining guys up in different formations and stuff like that. And some of the things that they're trying to throw in terms of the organizational moves, you know, they're building towards something, and you know, there's this impending decision period where the constitution of the team, like we're going to have a bunch of new, like several new starters, probably. I think at receiver, you can kind of just move guys up the line. You could maybe even re-sign Cobb at a team-friendly deal. I don't know how well he would do on another team. I don't know what the Matthews discussion is, if any. I don't know if we see him in the future. But Goot definitely has a plan, and he's definitely resolute in that plan. And you can see with how they approached Haha and how they, you know, didn't have any conversations with him prior to the season, that they had some pretty clear ideas about what he was able to do and what he wanted to do and where his head was at coming into the season.
Goot's plan, man. It's Goot's plan.
We don't know what it is, but it's there and it's in action.
And it's going to be Goot.
It's going to be Goot. Otherwise, he's a real cunst.
Yeah. All right. We got anything else, or do we want to throw out some predictions for this upcoming week before we bring on Josh from the Finsider?
You know, I just hope that the math doesn't shake out, that it's another one of those just good enough McCarthy keeps his job type deals, because he's shown me enough now where I'm ready for something new.
Yeah. I agree. I don't want that to happen again. You know, and it's one of those conundrums where you're like, okay, so I don't want to win. Well, I do want to win, but I don't want to win and save McCarthy's job. And to be fucking honest, man, he never deserved the credit for any of those wins that we did win.
Yeah.
When have we ever, and I said this a couple weeks ago, I'll say it every freaking week on the show if I have to, when have we ever got done watching a game and turned the person to our left or right and said, man, McCarthy sure did win us that one? Never. Ever, ever, ever. It's always been Aaron Rodgers or the defense. We've never been like, man, good thing we had McCarthy on the sidelines for that one.
Well, it's funny because when I do praise him, it's like, oh, that was a good drive, or what a gutsy call on that singular call. And I'll have like three and outs. And then it's like,
what a timeout he took.
What there. A terrible timeout. And then, yeah. And then he maybe like a couple good plays, and then Aaron Rodgers will improvise a touchdown.
Yeah. I don't know, man. It's time. I think everyone sees it. Everyone knows it. You know, you don't even get, like you said, you don't even get Aaron Rodgers backing him up really anymore. It's stale. It's extremely stale. And we can't allow that when you have someone like Aaron Rodgers. You just can't.
The love is gone, you know. The love is gone.
It's all over. I appreciate everything you did. I'll never forget him.
We had some good times.
It's time to go, man. It's not me. It's him.
And leave the Lombardi Trophy when you go.
Yeah. You don't get that. You don't get to keep that, McCarthy. Get the hell out. All right. Predictions before we bring on Mr. Houts.
I think it's going to be a Brock Osweiler game. And I think we're a little frustrated going against two of these heavy hitters the last couple of weeks. So I think we're going to win 35-13.
Ah, very close to what I had. I had 38-17.
Ooh.
That's actually extremely close. I think what we'll probably end up doing is we'll definitely be able to beat Brock. And I definitely think we can beat their defense. I think if you have Frank Gore and even Kenyon Drake, I would start them in fantasy just because I have a feeling that they're going to get dumb numbers. But I think overall we'll end up just being able to destroy their defense from linebackers back on. So I'm not too worried about that. I think it'll be a good game for us. We'll talk more about that when Houts comes on. Any final thoughts before we quick say hey to our sponsors?
No, I'm excited to beat up a team in teal this week.
A team in teal. All right, man.
What's up, Packer fans? Ryan Batley from the Ground Round Grill and Bar here, proud sponsor of the Sweep and the Fuzzy Thurston Sportsman Award. Packer season is here, and we're your one-stop shop for entertainment needs. 21 TVs, happy hour 7 days a week, daily specials like Tuesday BOGO burgers, and stellar service from our team that's going to make sure you leave happy. If you plan to catch the game action at home, check out our full delivery service offered daily, including breakfast delivery on the weekends. If you're heading north on game day, play it safe with our Packer tailgate bus. $20 will get you safely to and from Lambeau Field, plus a free beer when you get back. Call to reserve your seat at 920-725-1010. Fred, it's back to you. Go Pack, go.
All right, welcoming in from SB Nation's The Finsider, Mr. Josh Houts. Welcome to the show, man.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Did I get the last name right?
You nailed it.
I struggled. I was worried if we had some difference there. It's great to have you on. We're here to talk about the Dolphins, the next foe. You guys are 5-4, which is pretty remarkable because I can't quite nail down what that identity of this team is. You have Adam Gase, who's so highly regarded as an offensive genius, yet I have questions. I have questions around that. You know, you guys got injuries. There's those, of course. We'll talk a little bit about those. But the main question, and I think you guys have probably been asking it left and right, why is Frank Gore getting three times the touches over Kenyon Drake?
Yeah, that's a great question to lead off with because it gets my blood boiling. I don't think anyone can really give you a definitive answer. I mean, I had a couple of friends, the guys I do the Finsider Radio podcast with. He dropped the PFF rankings and kind of used that as the reason behind it, and it just doesn't make any sense. I mean, Kenyon Drake's 24. You bring in the ageless wonder, Frank Gore, and sure, he gets those sure yards up the middle, but he was averaging 2.7 yards per carry last week, and they just completely abandoned Kenyon Drake. I mean, it's mind-boggling. It makes no sense. I mean, and I know if you play fantasy football, you probably have one or, I mean, some people have Kenyon Drake, some people have Frank Gore, some have both. And it's even more frustrating to those guys, I mean, because they're putting money on the line. But when you're a Dolphins fan, you just see a guy like Kenyon Drake who can take the ball to the house every time he touches the football. And nothing against Frank Gore, but that's just not him this late into his career. So I have no explanation for that. I know Adam Gase came out in his press conference, I think it was Monday, and he said, you know, that isn't ideal for this team. They try to get split the carries down the middle, but it's freaking crazy. I can't explain it.
Well, we definitely understand and sympathize with the non-understanding of not giving your good running back the ball. We have that same issue with Aaron Jones, not getting enough carries.
Aaron Jones, yep.
Nothing against Frank Gore. I love Frank Gore, you know, Miami product, all that goodness. But yeah, it's disturbing to see. I wasn't sure. You know, when you first look at the stat line, you see, you know, 20 touch air, 20 carries for Frank Gore. You move down a little bit, you get to receiving, you go, oh, there you're going to see 10 10 or 12 catches for Drake out of the backfield. Again, even not there. I don't see why he's not become the focal point of that offense when you don't have a lot of other exciting parts. You know, you got rid of Landry, you know, Ajayi's gone, all those types of things, all the big name kind of guys. Tannehill being hurt, give it to Drake. Let Drake do his thing and kind of, you know, let Gase kind of use his genius there. But is that because of Tannehill being gone? Is that why we're not seeing Gase at his full potential?
It's hard. I mean, I think that's why Adam Gase, you know, hasn't quite peaked, because you see these glimpses with Tannehill in the lineup. He's been without his starting quarterback, and sure, it's Ryan Tannehill, and many teams or many fans might say, you know, that's not the best way to look and view your franchise quarterback. But when Ryan Tannehill's healthy, he's above average. He's a quarterback that you can win football games with. And this guy's been – he's had Jay Cutler. He's had Brock Osweiler last – I mean, those were your two quarterbacks the last two seasons, and what he's done has been pretty remarkable. So Adam Gase is frustrating to a lot of Dolphin fans, up and down on him every week. The Kenyon Drake thing, like you mentioned, I mean, he had 7 touches in the first half and didn't touch football in the second. So it just doesn't make any sense. I had someone joke that maybe they're saving him for the end of the season, because last year at the end of the year, he was probably, from a statistical standpoint, he was the best running back in football. So it's frustrating. I don't know why he's not getting the most out of this offense. I mean, they're looking pretty awful. And back to the Kenyon Drake thing, he missed a block last week. He had that fumble in the Chicago game that, you know, almost cost him that win. So maybe it's a little bit of him being in the doghouse and Frank Gore being the sure thing, but it's frustrating because, like you said, once Albert Wilson went down, I mean, they traded away Landry. Kenyon Drake might be the most explosive player on that offense, and they're just not finding a way to get him the football, and it's frustrating as a Dolphins fan.
It's a little crazy to think about a lot of the moves that the Dolphins have made. You know, I watched your game last week, and besides a lot of anemic offense, I think the only touchdown was a defensive score. You guys were, I think, like top 5 DVOA in the first few games of the season. And you've made all these like culture shifts, like Jay Ajayi getting out of there, getting rid of Sue. But then like Rashad Jones checked out of the game last week. And I don't know, it seems like there's some issues there. It seems like there's some locker room stuff going on. What's your feeling on that, having tracked this team so closely?
Yeah, you guys are hitting me with some tough questions, because I still don't think many of them has come to fruition. I don't think we really know the reason behind it. Rashad Jones, yeah, he took himself out of the game after only starting 10 plays on defense. And a lot of it they were saying was because Minkah Fitzpatrick was going to get more reps in the secondary. And Matt Burke, the defense coordinator, kind of saw him as the odd man out, which to me is completely crazy. Yes, TJ McDonald went out there and played a hell of a football game, but you can't take Rashad Jones off the field. And I don't know if he was frustrated because he was going to get less looks in that base defense, or if it was something Matt Burke said to him, because Adam Gase in his press conference said Rashad went up to his office, they talked, and he was going to take care of it and talk to Matt Burke, the defense coordinator. So I don't know if it was something that was said there. They're keeping it pretty hush-hush and not letting it get out. But I think it seems as though maybe Matt Burke went rogue, and you know, that was the decision he made. And as a defense coordinator, you kind of want to take them under your wing and be that guy that makes the decision. And I mean, they look great. You mentioned them being a good defensive football team at the beginning of the season, then they kind of shifted and they just went, they were awful. I mean, they gave up, I think it was 500 yards on the ground in 2 games between that Detroit game and the weeks following that, and it's been frustrating. And then they go out there and just destroy the Jets, which I think that has a lot more to do with the Jets being an awful team than it does the Dolphins defense. But I think we'll see this week. Hopefully Rashad Jones is out there. I still don't think anyone really knows what happened there. And I know as a Dolphins fan, it's frustrating to see arguably your best defensive player sit out in reps for, you know, TJ McDonald, who again had a good game, but he's still TJ McDonald.
Well, do you guys think culturally you're going in the right direction? I mean, I know a lot depends on Tannehill, but with like the kind of Devontae Parker drama earlier in the year and kind of getting rid of these skill players, do you guys feel like you're improving in a good way?
I mean, it's hard to say because you're a Dolphins fan and, you know, 7-9 and 8-8, that's kind of what you're used to these last few years. The culture change thing, Adam Gase, I'm not really sure why he went out there and said it, because, I mean, it's all you keep hearing about. But you have a guy like Jordan Phillips who went to Buffalo and he was just so happy to be out of Miami. Jay Ajayi, he went to the Eagles. He was just so happy to be out of Miami. Adam Gase joked with Landry that he was going to send him to Cleveland for his career to die. And, I mean, Landry's in Cleveland. Yes, he got that big deal, but he's happy to be away from the Dolphins. So there's definitely something there, and I don't know if it's an ego thing, But to say that we're heading in the right direction, I mean, you need to have a franchise quarterback. And as much as we all like to support Ryan Tannehill, I think he's due somewhere around $19 million next year. That's a lot of money for a guy who, you know, he hasn't been healthy in three seasons. And when he is, you're barely winning football games. You're not really having the success. And a lot of that can be attributed to, you know, New England. No one's beaten New England. As sad as it is to say, I mean, someday Brady's going to retire. Someday he's going to go off into the sunset. But until then, Miami might not stand a chance to win that AFC. So right now you're looking at a wild card. It's tough to say if we're heading in the right direction. I think they've drafted well. So culturally, I mean, you got a lot of these young guys in here. These are players, keys to this offense and defense that you can build upon for years. So I want to say yes, but you hate to see a guy like Jarvis Landry leave. You hate to see the JHIs leave. Now with Rashad Jones. So it's still up in the air, but I mean, you're 5-4 and Brock Osweiler's your quarterback. So, I mean, you can't be too upset with what happened, but to see those playmakers go, those, you know, they have those egos, they kind of clash with Adam Gase, but culturally, I think we are heading in the right direction. Let's go with that. Yes. Yes, we are.
Confidence is key, man.
Optimism. Yeah.
Dolphins fan. It's hard to be confident.
Not bad. It's really not. I mean, you mentioned it. You had Cutler and then you went Osweiler. I mean, the road's got to go up. All right. I don't think it can go any lower than that.
David fails. That would probably be a little bit lower.
A little bit. Let's go to Tannehill quick. He's ruled out, obviously. What's his timetable on coming back? Is he specified when he is? I mean, seriously, I feel like I don't remember watching Tannehill play. It's been so long. Is he coming back after the bye? Does that look like a possibility?
That, I know they came out today and they said that's kind of what they were shooting for. But I don't know if you guys, I mean, you probably don't follow the Dolphins too closely, but you see these pictures from practice and you got Brock Osweiler dropping back to throw a football and Tannehill's right next to him holding a stress ball in his hand. And it's just like one of those little hand ones. And it looks ridiculous. I don't even think the guy can throw a football yet. I know Armando Salguero, the Miami Herald, came out and said that every time he throws the football, it hurts. So I think they're shooting for after the bye, but I think that's being very optimistic. And I'm just waiting for that alert on my phone to say, you know, Ryan Tannehill's been put on IR and he's out for the year, because that's just life as a Dolphins fan. You're right. He's not healthy. You can't remember the last time he played. But those first 3 weeks of the season, I mean, the Dolphins looked pretty good and everyone was talking about him. The offense was playing well. And Ryan Tannehill, I mean, this team's a lot better off with him. So I don't think anyone knows for sure when he's coming back, but they're shooting for after the bye. And that's all the Dolphins can ask for at this point.
Do the Dolphins take a quarterback in the first round? Or is there way more pressing needs here?
I wouldn't say there is.
I'm shooting for the future here. I'm going a little ahead of our game.
No, I think I would absolutely think the Dolphins should be focused on a first-round quarterback. Like I said, Tannehill's cap hit next year is significantly greater. I mean, you can't pay a guy $19 million to be a guy. I mean, he's played how many games? I can't even tell you how many games he's played in three seasons. It's been that little that he's not worth what he's getting paid. And when he does play, I mean, no one still knows who Ryan Tannehill is. He shows you those glimpses of greatness, and then he does what he did in the Cincinnati game earlier this season and just laid an egg. So it's, I think first-round quarterback is absolutely the number one most pressing need for this team.
Still to this day, if you type in Ryan Tannehill on Google,
his wife,
followed by wife, yep.
Yeah, which is funny because I know some people like Will Greer in this draft class, and if you ever search his name on Google, I think the same thing comes up. She's almost like – some people are saying she's like computer generated because she's that perfect.
Maybe that's your problem.
Yeah, just picking pretty quarterbacks with pretty wives.
Not a bad strategy for us, but
yeah, for you, yeah.
We appreciate
Aaron Rodgers.
Well, hey, we've got our own issues. You know, it'll be interesting to see what happens when we meet you guys on Sunday. I'll be at the game. We have a tendency as Packers to make subpar teams with some decent players look like, for instance, Drake could end up with 200 yards against us. It wouldn't shock me. Amendola could have 5,000 yards. I mean, it's just the things like that happen when we play these teams and our defense seems to just shut down. How confident are you going into Sunday?
Well, it's funny you bring that up because I think it was the year you guys won the Super Bowl. Chad Henne and the Dolphins went up there, and I think they beat you guys. And I mean, that's just a prime example of both franchises. The Packers are a heck of a lot better than what their record is right now. And they just find ways to lose these inferior teams. And the Dolphins, I mean, they lose to poor teams, but then they go out there and they play the tough teams hard. I mean, last season they weren't very good and they destroyed New England on Monday Night Football in their throwbacks. I'm not sure if everyone remembers that game, but that was when Tom Brady had two picks and Xavier Howard was just lights out. So it's a game that the Dolphins and fans joke about that, you know, they're going to go up there and win. But personally, I just don't see it. You guys, you lost, what, two in a row? And Aaron Rodgers is Aaron Rodgers. And I think you guys are going to go out there and just put a whooping on this team. I hope I'm wrong. I hope the Dolphins defense can prove that it wasn't just a bad Jets team that made them look so well last week. And they go out there, they get the pass rush going. Those linebackers aren't a liability in coverage. I mean, Jimmy Graham could have a huge day because the Dolphins linebackers are just awful in coverage. And you guys got the weapons on the outside. I mean, you got those guys that many people may not even heard of when they're looking at your depth chart. Scantling, I mean, before the season, who knew who he was? There's another one, Saint. I don't even know how to pronounce his last name. But you got these players who just keep emerging out of nowhere, and I just see them having huge days against this Dolphins defense, who at times looks great and at others just a liability.
I think it's interesting. My mom is from Coral Gables, and she's been a long time Dolphins fan. And I kind of look back on like the history of the team, and I think about Shula, and I think about Dan Marino, and what are you looking forward to, and what do you have? What do you get excited about now as a Dolphins fan, other than, you know, new ownership group and some Landshark sponsorship or something?
Damn, I'm not sure. What do you, as a Dolphins fan, what do you look forward to next season? The draft? I mean, it's tough because you got these young players like Minkah Fitzpatrick, Raekwon Miller, and Jerome Baker. You got the pass rushers, Xavier Howard. You got these pieces, and you just don't have that guy who just, you know, you need that franchise quarterback. And the Dolphins, in my opinion, they don't have that right now. Too many injuries. And Adam Gase, I mean, we talked about it. He has a decent record, but he's been forced to use these guys like a freaking Brock Osweiler, a Jay Cutler, a healthy Ryan Tannehill. So looking forward to next season, looking forward to the future. I mean, you have those young players who can be elite at their position, but I don't think you're anything until you have a quarterback. So next year's draft, 2020's draft, because I'm pretty sure that's the one that everyone keeps touting with the quarterbacks. And this year they say, you know, this isn't the one with the flashy names or a great draft like last season. So we don't have the guy that I'm looking forward to in the future. We'll end it with that.
So would you say you're such a baby that the Dolphins make you cry?
Absolutely. Yeah. Win or lose, they make me cry.
Cam, you're ruthless tonight.
I wanted to drop the hoodie ref. I'd forgotten to do that earlier.
It's important.
Not many people drop the hoodie ref. I appreciate both of you.
Well, hey, we are from the era of Dan Marino, so I think deep down we always have a little bit of a respect. Just at his greatness, Shula, Ray Finkel, Snowflake. I mean, these are integral parts to the Dolphins.
Pat White and the Wildcat is my...
Pat White and the Wildcat, yes. And then he almost died against Pittsburgh.
Remember he almost died, yeah. He was a tiny person.
Yeah, he was.
Good stuff there. You guys got... you rewrite some history. Let's get the Dolphins back up and...
Oh, Ricky Williams. What am I thinking about here? I didn't even talk about Ricky Williams.
Not many teams can say all that stuff.
It's Nick Saban. Can we throw his name in there?
Oh, boy.
No one pisses us off more than Nick Saban, and then he took Dante Culpepper over Drew Brees.
But you know what? Here's to that. I know that gets brought up a lot in I kind of watched you on Twitter and stuff like that. You know, I'm always a huge component of the fact that it's got to be a perfect storm. It's got to be the right things fitting. We have no idea. Drew Brees could have failed miserably in Miami. Culpepper could have went somewhere else and done even more fat, disgusting things like he did. But don't fret too much on what you didn't have. Kind of look forward to what's going to happen. I think you guys have a brighter than most future. I do love a lot of the guys on your defense. Kiko Alonso is still a beast. They're just, I think there's just a few parts offensively, weapon-wise, and obviously quarterback-wise that I think are can get shored up. And you guys got a pretty decent team outside of that. Good offensive line when healthy as well. So that's me trying to be nice.
Thank you.
That's all I'm going to go with. Cam, you're already ruthless, so you can't come back and be nice. We're going to go good cop, bad cop on this one. But, yeah, you got anything else, Cam, before we let him get back to changing diapers?
Let's get a prediction.
Yeah, let's get a prediction. What do you got?
All right, let's go 27-14 pack.
Wow.
Yeah.
If the Dolphins were to win, for a question, what would the score be and how would they do it?
It would be 13-10, and it would be on a Sanders field goal, walk-off field goal. There we go. Is it supposed to snow? Do you guys know? I know it was kind of doing it up to the game leading up to it, but
I know it's supposed to get real cold, potential snow early in the morning, but I don't know if it's going to actually snow at all during the game.
It'll be fun. They flexed it to 425 too for what Fox kind of that evening game. It should be fun.
It'll be a good one. I'll be there. You know what I'll be doing. I'll be rooting for the Pack, of course. So we appreciate you coming on, taking the time out to talk with us. Why don't you give the viewers where we can find you on Twitter and all that goodness.
My Twitter is @Houtz, H-O-U-T-Z. I write for the Finsider, the SB Nation blog. I also write for Dolphin Maven, an up-and-coming Dolphin website. So check those out and go Dolphins.
All right, laces out, man.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Yep, later. All right, that was Josh Houtz from SB Nation's The Finsider. Cam, we have done predictions. We have talked to the Dolphins insider. We've talked about Mike McCarthy. We've talked about Gutekunst. We've talked about – shoot, we talked even about that Brady guy from Ferris State. I mean, I think we've done pretty well for ourselves.
I feel pretty cleansed.
I feel cleansed.
Yeah.
I feel ready for hopefully another interesting Sunday. I will be there. I can't wait, and I hope that we have some fun stuff to talk about next week. And with that, I will say, as always, go Pack, go.
Go Pack, laces out.